Hello, I am Mary Kay.
And I'm Louise.
And together we are Novel Gazing, the podcast that talks literary fiction. We are recording today's show on February 4th, so if good juicy gossip happens between now and then, that's why we're not talking about it yet. On today's show, we're discussing current affairs and news from the literary fiction world, how to handle difficult books, and we'll tell you more about what that means in a little while, and also sharing our latest reads. Also, we're so pleased that you found us.
Yay, well done you.
Yes, but we would love it if you could help others find us as well by leaving a review or a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're starting out here and we'd love to get 100 ratings as it makes a huge difference to how people find us. And if you could help us with that, we will love you more than we already do.
Seconded.
Yeah.
All right. So before all of that, let's hear from one of our sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge strategy and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant Rivals to Lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Luis can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric, and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so we shall kick off with news and current affairs, I think. And I think the one that I was wanting to chat to you about today, Mary Kay, was the Curtis Sittenfeld is writing a What If Hillary Clinton Didn't Marry Bill book. And I'm sure the title is going to be more pithy than that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically what happened if when he proposed to her, she said no and went off and did her own thing.
As a woman who has made many missteps in the romance world, I feel like all of us, whenever, like, after a relationship goes poorly, we're like, oh my God, I could have done so much more if I had just seen it out. I mean, not that that was a mistake on her part or anything like that, but just on the level of being like a woman, I'm interested in that concept of like the decision tree of who you date. But what do you think about this one in particular?
I think it's really interesting that she's such like an immediate public figure, and that she's got this story that, and I'm speaking very much here as someone who isn't American by any means, but that has this story that resonates outside of America and outside into you know, the climate of publishing in a worldwide context, because that is what this mm-hmm. book will be, right? Mm-hmm. So the thought of going, okay, what if she didn't marry Bill? What if that became the story that she's had becomes something totally different? It's interesting to me.
It's interesting to me based on the perspective of the author.
Yeah.
Like, who is that? And is it really just like a pipe dream of sorts where I wish that that hadn't happened? Or is it? It's also interesting. You said in here that they're real people, but I mean, we don't have any problems with alternate histories where the way it did happen is everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine when Tarantino does it. For many people, it's fine. but I don't know. I mean, what does that mean that we're doing it while it's happening? Because, technically, it's not too late. Like, she could marry someone else if she really wanted to.
Do you think it's like, because what you said earlier about it being like a wish fulfillment thing, do you think it's mm-hmm. like a fanfic type of effort? Like, you know, this is what if, this is what it could have been, and this is where this woman could have gone.
Like a political fanfic.
Yeah, like a political fanfic.
Mixed with a little bit of romance.
I hope. This sounds brilliant. If someone wants to write this, another one, please do.
So, what if books in general, when I read that question, I was like, blech. No. Like, it does kind of seem like a fantastical wish fulfillment.
Okay.
That doesn't appeal to me personally. But I know that lots of people really love fantasy.
Yeah, I think there's a real big trend, like in the British books, for what if Britain lost the Second World War? There's a fair few of those around. And, you know, like the alternate mm-hmm. histories where, oh, if such and such had happened, then where would we be now? And all that. And I can see they're really exciting because you kind of reimagine what the world could have been, but then you also have this appreciation for, you know, or maybe a distaste in certain contexts for what the world like is.
Right. I think it can get also really gross really fast because I live in the South, and the way people rewrite our Civil War in the South.
Yeah.
Is like, what if the South had won? Like, that would be a huge horror, terrible experience for a lot of people.
So it's like,
and so I think when we get into what if stuff, it kind of, it's a fine line. Like, I'm not saying that's what this book will do, but
it's part of a true, it's part of a, like, I don't know if I can call it a genre, like a tradition maybe, of reimagining. Yeah. And it's all the sort of the power struggles that go into it, as you say, who retells mm-hmm. the stories and who makes who the winners.
Mm-hmm. It's almost a denial too.
Yeah.
Of like, no, this did happen. Like, it you gotta come to terms with it.
It's like,
whatever horrible atrocity happened, like, would be great if it didn't. I mean, again, not saying that this marriage was an atrocity or an abomination of any kind. I don't know the ins and outs of their relationship. But when we get into like rewriting history, I think it's dangerous even to do it in a fictional way. But of course there's a line. It's just
It's just finding that line, isn't it? And like standing on it and going, okay, this is where mm-hmm. this is and this is what this talks to, but it's not doing perhaps any of the stuff that you mention.
Mm-hmm. I think to a degree, like, some transparency established with the reader at the very jump of like, this is a work of fantasy.
Mm.
Just sort of dispelling any misconceptions that you might have about what the actual history was.
Wasn't there wasn't there that thing where it was, Scarlett Johansson getting mm-hmm. fictionalized and suing about her fictional representation?
I don't know about that.
Oh, no, this has just reminded me. Like, using real people in books and using them as, like, characters in this fictional environment. It is, as you say, it's mm-hmm. a really difficult space to navigate, and you do need that transparency of going, these are my rules, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think as an author as well, especially if you're writing nonfiction, portraying it the way that you see it is a matter of perspective.
Mm.
No matter what, like, you're not going to make everyone happy, but just because, like, even if it is true, people wish they had acted better.
Mm.
Like, don't air my dirty laundry. It's like, well, you did it. It's kind of fair game. So
your dirty laundry was already aired.
You did that.
You did this. It's on you.
You're the one that put it out there. It was on the clothesline. What do you want me to do? Point at it?
Yeah, sorry. It's just the job.
Right.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's really an interesting piece of news, though. And the one that I found that is interested me, and of course we'll link to it in the show notes, but it's about what the great Russian writers didn't get about the criminal mind.
Okay.
Which, of course, is something that's interesting to me as a person who is super interested in criminals and crime and murder and all that. Speaking of atrocities. but it seemed like the main thing that this author was saying is that in the time when Dostoevsky and his Russian counterparts were in prison or labor camps or what's the term that I'm looking for? I'm not saying it right.
Incarceration? Maybe.
Yes. And I think that there's a more specific term that I'm.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that everyone listening is screaming it at us.
Yeah,
right,
really
now,
sorry. So. Our apologies for your well-being at this point.
But when they were serving their sentences, gangsters weren't really a thing then.
Okay.
In Russia, which I think is very interesting. Because I would never have considered them not being a thing. Because in every prison movie I've seen, it's like where you sit at the lunch table determines what gang you're associated with, whether you've been like indoctrinated in it or whatever.
Okay.
But yeah. So what did you think? Did you have any?
I thought it was really interesting. Russian history and Russian writing is still something that I struggle with a lot, and we're going to talk about this, I know, like the things we struggle with in a sec, but
That's why I picked it, because I know that, like, Anna Karenina, like we talked about on our last episode, was one that I really struggled through, and that's, of course, Tolstoy, but I really like Dostoevsky because he deals with, like, the inner workings of the criminal mind so much, or like morality,
which
is very interesting to me. So I don't have any, they're behemoths. Like, the books are huge. So like, it's still a struggle to get through.
It's like a physical commitment as well as a mental commitment.
Like,
really, I'm
going
to have to look this around for the next 6 years it takes me to read it.
Right. Should we move on into the difficult books?
Yes, because I think that sounds like an excellent link.
But before we do that, a word from our sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her sole family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away With Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Okay, so let's just lead this new section off with a little false intimacy and saying maybe one personal confession about a book that we found difficult to read, and this maybe some strategies that we worked through.
Yeah, I think that's a really important one. We were saying just before we started recording about what we wanted to do here, and mm-hmm. Literary fiction, you can read it and go, I have no clue what I've just read, and I have that mm-hmm. a lot, and it's just about working through that feeling and kind of going, all right, maybe I'm not understanding all of it, but I'm understanding an element of it, or I'm picking up a texture or a feeling from it. And when I first mm-hmm. came to Simone de Beauvoir and something like her work, there are layers upon layers upon layers there that I just don't pick up. And that's just through unfamiliarity with her and not quite fully realizing and recognizing the context and the things that she's talking to. So yeah, I think I love her, but I'm conscious that I love a very particular element of her at the moment, and I'm not mm-hmm. fully uncovered who she is or what she's writing about. So I think the big tip that I have for understanding that was just giving myself the time to realize that I don't understand and recognize and realize everything about this writer, but I will, because it comes, doesn't it? It comes.
Mm-hmm. I had to kind of do that with Absalom, which is the hardest book that I've ever finished.
Okay.
And I restarted it many times.
But that's quite a cool thing to say, the hardest book you've ever finished. I like that.
Well, thank you. I ended up loving the book. I truly do love it. But it was and is very hard to access, because I remember liking a particular section and my friend came over who is also a writer, and I was like, let me read you this, just this one sentence. And I flipped back 7 pages because the syntax is so involved that it's really hard to structure your reading time.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the hardest one that I finished. I also, just as a confession, it's very hard for me to read 19th century British lit.
I have such sympathy here, my goodness.
Because all the characters run together for me. And all of their names sound the same.
Uh-huh.
And all of their distinguishing factors. At the time, it would have been very distinct yeah. for someone to have, a long neck. But to me, that's just, a regular
neck.
It doesn't, set anyone apart, you know? So that's probably my biggest confession. Other things, a big book, it doesn't really intimidate me, because I'm I'm going to read, one small section at a time. And I think that is, and when I was teaching, that's what I would tell my students too, is they're I can't believe you're making us read this whole thing. And I'd be well, you don't have to read the whole thing in one sitting. You read 10 pages and then get a snack. And then you read 10 more pages and then you check Facebook
yeah.
or Twitter or Snapchat or whatever social media.
But it's giving yourself the liberty to do that, isn't it? And going, okay, look, I'm just going to do it in tiny, tiny bits. And then, boom, I'm going to celebrate doing that tiny bit. And then I'm going to move on.
Right. One of my favorite things to do, and this is honestly how I tried to get through Anna Karenina and it defeated me. My favorite thing is to make a cast list.
Okay.
So if you have, especially with the Russian novels, right? You draw a box around the character's name, and then as you're going, you keep a piece of paper beside you and you write what was the one that my students were having trouble with? Oh, it was from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, of Love and Other Demons,
right.
Because the names And I had several Spanish speakers in the class, but like some of the names were Portuguese. And if you didn't have any background in Spanish, they were very hard to pronounce. So you would just kind of gloss over the name, you know? So like it wasn't a name that you were familiar with, and they kind of would run together. And I think that was what happened to me with the Russian names in Anna Karenina. They all sound the same. Same with the British names, right? Like, I really feel like that's why I don't have a great history of, or like a memory of the founding fathers of America, is because all of their names sound the same to me. But if I, you know, have read a story about them where, say, for example, Lin-Manuel Miranda is playing one of them, then I can keep it straight. What I would have them do is like draw a box around each character's name and then write out the qualities that they learned about him or her or them as they were going. And then when they come into class, I'd be like, okay, what actor did you cast?
I really like that. That like fan casting of people. So you've got their faces.
Yeah. And I think it helps also, and we're going to talk about this later, but like if you didn't understand what was happening, like you couldn't get a good read on a character, when the rest of the class cast Athena. Cast like Angela Bassett as Athena. It's like, oh, I got it now. Like timeless, ageless beauty, right?
Yeah.
Right. Powerful, a little bit like... she's not scary, but you're a little intimidated by her beauty.
Yeah, you're aware if she walks in the room.
Yes, it's like a force of nature thing. And my favorite one, and you're going to have to help me pronounce and get the names right again, Chimamanda Adichie Ngozi. Did I get it right, in the right order?
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
I switched them. I always do that. I don't know why.
Or maybe I switched them.
Y'all know who she is.
Yeah, like,
she's amazing, and has the best shoes in all of land. She really does. But the dad in that book was a hard read for a lot of my students, and we cast Andre Brower.
Okay.
As that character, because he's like, I mean, he's Captain Holt in Brooklyn Nine-Nine for anyone listening who is not familiar with that actor. But he's like stern, but very loving.
I like that. I really do. I think that's such a helpful way to do it, because you've got like the scaffold of everyone else's thoughts to think, okay, this is the direction that I should be heading in.
Right. And then I'd have some people cast him as like, you know, someone totally different. I'll be like, no, you're wrong. They were like, no, I'm not wrong. That's my opinion. So that was fun. But that's a thing that really helps me, especially when the names run together, like they do with the Russian books.
So like with things that run together, one of the problems that I had, and again, we'll link to these books in the show notes, is that Ducks Newburyport by Lucy Ellman. With it being such one long, unbroken sentence, vast amounts of it, I just couldn't figure out a place for me to stop reading. Right. Like, I was reading to the end of the sentence, and I'm thinking, well, the end of the sentence is in, like, 30 pages. I'm going to die of exhaustion before I get there. This is very stressful. It's meant to be my bedtime read. And yet I'm still here at, like, 2 a.m. going, I just need the end of the sentence.
I think, like... not knowing where to stop is a good problem to have, because sometimes I've been reading books and just been like,
yes,
I don't want to, I don't want to anymore.
Yeah, I'm just done.
But yeah, so I think that in that case, like when my mind wanders, I do have an issue with nonfiction sometimes when it gets very journalisty.
Okay.
If that makes sense, when it's like, it can be literary nonfiction. Like I had this issue with Devil in the White City, which is exactly my niche. Like I should have been that book. But for some reason, like it was really hard for me to get into it. If that makes sense, like to get the ball rolling, like once you get rolling, I don't want to stop. And then it's not, then I just have to be like, okay, you have to go to work now. You literally should have been working for 15 minutes.
You should have been leaving the house and doing other things.
Right. Your hair should be clean. Okay? Like, what are you doing? Okay, so what I have done in that case is It really helps for me to turn off all my distractions. So, like, I have to turn off the TV.
Yeah, good call.
I have to turn my phone on airplane mode, and then, you know, every 10 pages or whatever, and I'll dog ear them too, so I can see it coming. You know, I'm looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. But I'll check my phone. Like, it's my reward.
Yeah, exactly.
If that makes sense, to get through it.
Yeah, I don't have time for this whole, oh, it's like your book or your phone or your book or your life, you know, that sort of thing. You can't.
Right.
You have to carve out like this precious moment of reading. We do it on the bus, right? We do it on the train. We snatch a chapter when you're waiting for the kids to finish practice or something. You have to fit it in around your life. So yeah, doing it in these short little bites and not being like bothered about that is a great thing to be.
Yes. I have on occasion, though, when I'm trying to get into the book, it's hard for me to like stop and start.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll have to be like, okay, this 30 minutes, that's your plan. That's what you're doing for this.
So you like deliberately blocking it out and going, okay, I'm going to do until this.
I've gotten up early before to do it that way.
Okay.
And I'll also do the thing where I listen to the audiobook while I'm reading it so my mind can't wander.
See, I can't cope with the pressure of that. Like, I am the sort of chef who can't turn on the oven until I've fully done everything beforehand. So, like, the oven isn't staring me out. So, like, the audiobook isn't staring me out as well. There are all these things just going, you're not ready yet for me.
Yeah, I can't do it for a long time because after I get into it, I'm like, okay, shut up. I got it. Like, I'm reading faster than you. But I'll sometimes like just listen to the preview.
All right.
On Audible or whatever. What's the big one that we love?
Do you know what? I really do step away from audiobooks.
Libro FM. Please make me sound smart. Or Libro FM. So I will listen to the preview, and then if I really like the narrator, and I also like doing that too, because especially when I don't know how to pronounce the names, the narrator saying it helps me be like,
yeah,
got it now. Okay,
that's
I got who
what
how
I
to
should
say
be
their
listening
name
for, and that's what I should be hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Then another thing that helps me a lot, and this is what I would tell my students, so I'm sure that you do this, and I'm sure that many of our listeners already do this, but writing in the book as I go is very helpful. Even if it's just like my extreme reactions to something that a man said to a woman.
Okay.
Even if I just write an emoji in the margin, like it reminds me that I had an extreme reaction
to that.
Yeah,
that something hit home for you, that like that emotional response.
Right, or like writing "how dare you" period in the margin. Like it's just a way for me to be like, oh yeah, that's when he did that terrible thing. So that helps. And then another thing that I do, again, especially when I'm reading books that have been translated from another language or just like above my reading level, I have to circle words that I don't know and then look them up at the end of the page.
Okay.
Otherwise, I just can't. Like, I don't retain anything because I'm glossing over it. And that's how I learned the word ignominious, which Nathaniel Hawthorne uses 5 times a page in the beginning of The Scarlet Letter. It is insufferable. I do not know why he did that. But, yeah, my 11th grade English teacher called that a whoopee. Like, it makes the author feel safe if they overuse that word.
That's amazing. All right.
Yeah, and then I used to make little games for myself when I was reading. Yeah. I'm right. Like, how many times did you say it on this page? Oh, 7? Great.
It's like their emotional crutch.
To do that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, yeah, and the other thing that I wanted to mention at this point is you just reminded me, actually, with, like, the writing on the books. I don't ever write on library books, my listener friends.
No.
I do remember one library book coming back in once, and it just had every time a certain political party in the UK was mentioned, this person had written next to it liars every time. And I was obsessed. Like, I started flicking through this book as I was shelving it, and I spotted this, and we ended up going through the entire book, and every time he'd mentioned this party had been mentioned, there's just this carefully inked in word liars next to it. So I was
amazing.
Like, yeah, that was some impressive work. Yeah, slightly inappropriate, but quite an impressive effort to have that consistency through the entire thing.
It's terrible that it happened in a library book, but hilarious that you got to see their prank.
Yeah, the terrible hilarity of Libraryland. I think that could be a story.
I had a question for you about big books, like heavy books. What do you do?
Well, this tied in again to some library light thing back in the day, where I remember talking to some people who literally couldn't manage the really heavy, weighty books, because, as we say, it's the physical thing. And I think the rise of e-readers and online and audio has helped to address that a little bit. But equally, books are getting big, right? You know, if you get some fancy pants hardback illustrated deluxe edition, that is, it's like a little brick in the bottom of your bag. So I think and again, this ties into some stuff we've discussed before about the person who chopped the books in half.
Yes.
On Twitter, which was horrific.
I think Charles Darwin did that too.
Did he?
I think so.
Darwin, you dog.
I mean, even more of an abomination in his day, because those books would have been so expensive.
Yeah.
And incredibly hard to bind and print, probably.
Some poor, crying bookbinder following him, just going, Charles, please stop.
Right.
Stop doing this to my life's work.
Just stumbling behind him, crying.
Yeah. God.
Talk about writing How Dare You in the margin.
So
you think that's terrible? Don't do that?
I'm not a slice and dicer when it comes to a book, by no means. But I do have to think about, where can I read these? Because if it's really heavy, then I'm not lugging it around and it's mainly a home read and it's kind of fitting it in and scheduling it a bit differently. But I don't think I've ever reached the point of having to chop something up.
I have not done it, but I have thought about it.
You've come close.
Yes, and I've had books that definitely have fallen apart because of me transporting them, like textbooks and stuff like that, which really made me mad because those are stupid expensive
things.
No, and they were just pages falling out, and I was like, unacceptable. Like,
this is
spring
like half
for the expensive glue.
This half my bank loan has gone on one book and now it's falling apart. I was like, thanks.
Really? Yes. Okay. So I haven't done that, but I've thought about it. And when my paperback books have fallen apart before that were huge, because you know they'll do that if you crease the spine sometimes.
Yeah.
I've just been like, okay, I'll tape it back together when I'm done.
Yeah. There's just time. There's always time to mend it, but I'm not sure if I don't know, just the idea of chopping is alien to me in a vast amount of ways. I'd have been the one crying after Charles Darwin.
I think I would, as I was doing it, feel very not happy.
No, I think that's a good call. I think that's a good call to feel an emotional response to that situation. All right, so the other one we wanted to talk about was scary books. And this is one I'm going to throw over to you because this is your niche and I am terrified.
Okay, so I think the first thing to know about reading scary books is you got to know yourself.
Okay.
Like, what actually scares you? And then If you are trying to tackle it, which I think that I talked about before, of trying to make myself be scared so that I, like an exposure therapy type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, know yourself, right? Like if something is a trigger warning to you and it's literally going to send you into a panic attack, it's not worth it.
Yeah, believe in your own limits and respect them. Like be kind to yourself. What's the point of pushing yourself into this painful place?
Right. If it's an assignment, you got to try. That's how I feel about it. Try it, do your best, write about your experience, and any teacher, right, mm-hmm. is going to recognize that you tried.
Yeah.
And you had an experience, and it's not for you. And not everything will be for you, and that's okay.
Yeah, and if they don't recognize that, send them to us, and we will write you a note that says,
yes,
wrong.
We will write a strongly worded email, yes, on your behalf.
We are here to do such things.
I have done it before. yes. So I think that is a big thing. With me, I don't like to be scared of stuff. And I also feel like movies and books put those types of experiences in controlled environments. So yes. If at any point I'm like, this is too much for me, I'm going to close the book. I'm going to go turn on the office. I'm going to say a quick prayer. I'm going to do one nice thing per day and I'm going to stay in my lane. And then, you know, like, some of it is knowing yourself and some of it is like braving a fear, like being scared and then doing it anyway. Mm. I know, for me, like, I think I've talked about this on this show before, but, demons are really scary for me and evil children because I believe in them and I think they exist. And so learning about them is helpful for me to kind of
manage that.
The more you know, there's yes. power in knowledge, I think. So,
oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
And same with true crime. Like, I used to not be able to watch home invasion stuff. And it's still, the poster for The Strangers is horrifying.
Oh, no.
Like, it's just this woman in her kitchen, and then there's like a mask peeping out of a doorway behind her.
No.
Absolutely not. Like, that's horrible. So, for example, like, if you're reading something about home invasion or, like, a haunted house, maybe don't read it when you're home alone.
Yeah.
Maybe read it in the library or read it in the morning, like, at the coffee shop, surrounded by people you love.
In a dark place surrounded yeah. by kittens and rainbows. And it'll work.
Yeah. I think that is part of it. And I know we're going to talk about this in a minute, but whenever I've read something that was super scary to me, I tried to find someone else who had read it so I could just process it with them.
Yeah.
Like, if something really freaked me out, I would be like, I got to talk about this. I got to talk about it. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say. I just need to say it out loud so it's out there.
But it's as you say, like, talking about it and getting the knowledge helps you deal with that thing.
I think yeah. so, yeah. Because then it kind of helps me understand why I'm scared of something.
Exactly.
Like, is it something that actually happened to me, or am I scared of it because, like, what's the, I guess, is the impetus the right word?
What sort of sentence?
I don't know. I think it's wrong. And I'm just trying to sound smarter than I am.
Oh, no.
Which happened. I'm going to look that up. Next time I'm going to use it correctly. yeah, I think figuring out what yeah. is scary about it helps. And I think that's part of the point of literary fiction, right? Like we talked about in episode zero, what is it?
Mm.
It's what is literary fiction? I think it's something that makes you think about it afterward. Like, it doesn't, what's happening on the page isn't all of it.
Yeah.
Is happening, and it's not all it means.
Like the whole dropping like sense. A pebble into a pond and just seeing the after effects on yourself.
Yes. Yeah. What a great image.
Hi, yeah. And we're done. We'll sign off there. so yeah, the final...
Leave them on a high note.
So yeah, the final thing I think we wanted to touch on, and again, as Mary Kay says, we talk about what literary fiction is and what it can be in episode zero. So do feel free to go back and check that one out. It's a bite-sized intro ep, and
mm-hmm.
it should give you a bit more clarity about our angle on this. But we wanted to touch on the notion of books we just don't understand. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. we talked about this a bit already and covered it. But yeah, how do you deal with a book that you are just not getting?
How do I deal with
it? Yeah, what's your sort of, if you are reading something and you're just thinking, I just mm-hmm. don't get any of this, I don't understand it, there's nothing here that's connecting to me, is that something you can manage, or like, do you have any tips about that?
Yes. So a lot of the time I will need to read a book because it's just a hole in my knowledge. And the reason that it's a hole in my knowledge is because I can't make myself care about it. Like, the one that I had to read and just could not get invested in is Beowulf. And I had to, right? Because it's a staple of literature. Like, a lot of those epics are very inaccessible to me. Mm-hmm. So what I've had to do is go find someone who loves it, and sit them down and say, tell me why this is important.
Yeah.
Like, if I know why it's important, it won't necessarily make me care about it, but I have a reason, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
And so I asked my teacher that. I was like, I think this was like my sophomore year in college. I was like, I don't care about this. Can you, like, and I'm trying. Like, she knew that I was like a good student. Yeah. I was like, I just don't know why I should like it. And she was like, you don't have to like it. It's just about how to, like, reintegrate veterans into society and how they couldn't do it.
Oh, boom.
And I was like, oh, well, now I care. Like, now I care a lot. Because, you know, Beowulf goes off and fights, and then he's kind of like, well, now what?
You know what?
Like,
yeah.
What do I do with my life now? And then he dies in battle, and it's happy. Right? Like, that's a hero's death, and especially, like, Viking culture, right? But anyway, so I think that the trick is, for, like, it's kind of like eating your vegetables, right? Yes. Like, I hate this. I keep hating it while I'm eating it. But if someone is like, yes, but it'll prevent you from having heart failure, it's like, oh, well, worth it. Like, yeah. I'll choke it down. Yep. And I have a reason. Yeah. What about you? How do you deal with books you don't understand?
Do you know what? I think with your mention of Beowulf, actually, I tend to go towards comics if I can. Because I think it's really interesting to see, and this is all touching on the stuff that we've chatted about, is someone else's opinion on something, someone else is reading on it. Plus, I think that comics, especially with the big established litfic classics, the big sort of almost impenetrable texts, comics can do something really exciting there and kind of destabilize them a little bit and open them up and find that space for the you as the reader to get in and get some purchase on these texts. So one of the ones that I actually really enjoyed was a version of Beowulf, which is what reminded me of The Connection. And it was by a guy called Gareth Hines. And he's done some really interesting interpretations of things like Beowulf and the Odyssey. And he did one on Romeo and Juliet as well, which was really exciting. So I love...
That's really cool.
Yeah, I really recommend them. They're so good. Spinning comics into these discussions is really exciting.
Yeah, I actually was thinking about, like, looking at an adaptation first. Like, I have a graphic novel by Isabel Greenberg, The 100 Nights of Hero, which is a retelling of Arabian Nights or a Thousand and One Nights.
I have that on my reservation list.
So, I mean, I think that can be really helpful. And then, like, along with casting the characters, I have, and I know I should feel bad about this, but I don't. Sometimes I'll watch the movie first just so I can get like the narrative down. And then, of course, like, if you read the book and then watch the movie, you can't enjoy the movie because you're like, well, this is not the way it really happened. Like, this is not, it's not right.
No, but if it works, that's how it works, at least. That's the thing, right? If it gets you into these stories, it doesn't matter,
right,
like, the route that you take or the journey that you have in understanding them. It's a way in and it's a way towards understanding. So again, yeah, if you get told, listeners, that if you get told that watching the movie isn't valid or it doesn't let you understand the book in its original 19th century Italian translation, let us know and we will write you again an angry worded email on your behalf.
Right. And I don't think it takes the place of reading the book by any means. I'm not trying to say that. Like, you can tell if someone has only seen the movie.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
It's just part of the journey, but right?
Yes. And I think, speaking of that, especially now that we have television interpretations and, like, miniseries instead of just one movie, like, we're allowed to get a lot more of the nuance of the book in the adaptation. And I think one that... I didn't have a problem with this one, but I know a lot of my fellow students did when I was assigned Roots. Like, I whipped through that. Okay. That was amazing. It was accessible. It was such an important book. This is Alex Haley's Roots. But I had a lot of friends who were like, no, I just wanted to watch the movie with LeVar Burton. And it's like, well, yeah, do that too. You know, like, then you have the visuals, which, I mean, and I think it's not fair either because some people are just not visual or auditory learners.
Yes.
And so excluding them from books because they're not, because they're doing audiobook instead of reading it with their eyes, that's not really fair.
Yeah, like, it's not a route we go down here, I don't think, by any means.
No, yeah.
No, we don't, yeah. We do not support exclusion.
However you get it is good.
Yeah, it's all good for us. So shall we talk about our current reads now for a bit and just share what we're reading?
Oh, yeah, I want to.
Oh, yeah, you go
first. I want to share this. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, so what I'm reading right now is called The Cooper's Wife is Missing, The Trials of Bridget Cleary by Joan Hoff and Marion Yates. And this is a historical true crime about a woman who was thought to be a changeling. Mm-hmm. And her subsequent death because they tried to exorcise the changeling from her.
And I'm thinking exorcise as in not as in going to the gym.
Right, exorcise. You know how I have a thing with demons, Louise. Like, these are changelings, but for all intents and purposes, very similar. Okay. So that's what I'm reading right now. And it's actually, I'm glad I stuck with it. The first 50 pages didn't even mention her. So it was a lot of like context of what was happening in Ireland and England at the time, which is very relevant. But I had to use some of the tactics that I mentioned earlier to kind of get in there. Yeah. Now that I'm halfway through it, I'm like, yeah, I want more. But you know how sometimes it's tough getting started. Speaking of, how's your reading going?
Well, I am starting to just weep over Les Miserables. It's like literally the world moves on, civilizations rise, civilizations fall. Planets grow, stars explode, and I've read like 10 pages of this book. But apart from that, wow. I know it's going to take me forever. So we can throw a party in like the next 6 years when I do finish it. But on a brighter note, I got my
baby steps.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, on a brighter note, I finally got my hands on Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo, and it is just dreamy. It should have won the Booker Prize outright for last year. It's outstanding, and I urge you towards it if you are like me, only just sort of getting towards reading it. It's just great.
Now, this is the one that you talked about on the last episode.
Yeah,
right?
The one that split the Booker with Margaret Atwood and the Testaments.
Right.
Yeah, the mixed feeling situation. But this is an outstanding piece of work. It's gorgeous and it's lyrical and it's brilliant. And like 10 pages of that was a couple of minutes. So there's my comparison.
Right. I mean, some books move faster and that doesn't make them better or worse. I don't think. But
it's a different beast. So yeah, that's my current read. It's great.
Wonderful. This has been so much fun. Yeah. Talking to you about this topic because I don't know, when I was teaching it was a topic a lot.
Yeah.
I don't want to read.
No one ever goes
like,
oh, reading is hard. Oh, reading is hard work or difficult, do they? Everyone's like, oh, reading's so great. And it's like it is. Right. But it's also quite complicated.
Right. And the same with anything, the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, job done.
So thank you, Louise. This is a great topic.
Love talking
and
to you.
Thank you to our sponsors and thank y'all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe through however you get your podcasts. Don't forget to tell your friends about us. And again, if you could leave us a review and rating if you enjoyed the episode, it really helps other people find us. It helps a lot. And you can find us, Louise and I, individually. Where can they find you, Louise?
You'll find me at my website, which is didyoeverstoptothink.com, and I am at shallowfan Twitter.
And this is Mary Kay. My website is marykaymcbrayer.com, and I'm also on Twitter at mkmcbrayer and Instagram at my full name again, Mary Kay McBrayer. We love it when y'all reach out. We love hearing from you. We would love to hear what you want to hear from us. Yeah. Yes. And thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.